Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are along Michigan Avenue in the Allstate Showcase studio. A beautiful spring day. This is what we've been waiting for. Well, waiting for two things, really. A day like today and Elise Glink on a phone line. We'll talk to Elise now, as she, of course, is the person behind bestmoneymoves.com, ThinkLink, and all of that. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Nice to be here.
You're not outside today, are you?
Well, not yet. I will be as soon as we're off the air. It's so gorgeous out.
I think this is house hunting time, right? This is the time of year when a lot of people, renters, I think May 1st, as I recall, is a big rental month, but the spring is a push for housing as well.
It is. So spring is typically the biggest month for home sales, and it's a little bit of a harbinger for what's going to happen the rest of the year. And realtors in the Chicago area, as well as nationally, are worried because, yet again, for the umpteenth month in a row or season in a row, we're not seeing an increase in the number of homes for sale.
Dennis Rodkin from Cranes is going to be along later, writes about real estate, as you know, and he's got a number of stories that we're actually going to talk about rentals and how the number of people and the more affluent people who are moving toward renting. So if you're in the market now, is renting more attractive, or how do you decide if you want to buy or you want to rent? Which would be better?
Well, you know, I always say that there are valid reasons to rent and valid reasons to buy. If you know where you're going to be for the next 5 to 10 years, if you know your job is secure, you've got enough cash in the bank, you should buy because interest rates are low. But if none of those things are true, then you should rent because with the way that home price appreciation is moving, particularly in the Chicago area, not going up that much every year, you might, if you don't stick around for 5 or 7 years, you might actually lose money when it comes time to sell. Oh. So renting would be a smarter move.
Over time, though, you're better off owning your home than you are renting homes?
I think you are, because if nothing else, it's enforced savings. So you get to live in your own space, you can improve the home, and you're, every single month you're banking that money as you pay down your mortgage.
Hey,
people will say, well, but maybe you could invest that. And my answer to that is, but people don't.
Right. They go to Walgreens instead. Hey, I just asked you a question. Was that one of the 100 questions every first-time home buyer should ask?
It is. It's actually right at the beginning, because when you're a millennial, and millennials are now the biggest part of all first-time homebuyers out there, people who are maybe 37 and down to maybe 22, 23 years old, that's the biggest cohort that's actually looking to buy housing right now. And for them, deciding whether to rent or to buy is a big question. A lot of them are leaning towards renting.
That's the name of Elise's book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. And you should pick that up if you're interested in it. Okay, let's do this. What about, and maybe the time has passed, buying property to use as rental for income? Are we still there, or do we miss that window?
I think we're still there in the Chicago area. And in fact, there are types of houses and homes that are just simply not selling, and so they're selling for less. We still have one of the largest numbers of foreclosures in the whole country, actually. We're still haven't come out of the recession from 10 years ago in terms of the housing stock, really. And so there's a lot of possible inventory there. It needs work, and that's one of the reasons it's not selling in the regular market. But if you're going to be a real estate investor, working on your house and building in some appreciation shouldn't scare you off. There's a lot of other things that might scare you, but that shouldn't be one of them.
And tell me as well about condo deconversions and these ideas that condos, buildings that have been condo for a time, are now reverting back to rentals.
Yeah, I would call these failed condos. So these were buildings that were either built as condos or built as rentals, and then they were converted to condominiums. People bought the places they were living in. But for many reasons, they've proven unable to resell them over time. And so we call this a failed condo conversion. And now what's happening is big real estate investors are coming in and they're buying up the whole building, every single condo in the building. I think under Illinois law, 3/4 have to vote to deconvert, and then everybody has to sell. And dozens of these have been going on, and they're valued at between $10 and $50-60 million, because all of these condos are, you have to buy them up and then you turn them back into a rental property. It's a very interesting thing we've been seeing.
And it's profitable for these developers to buy up the individual condos, and they'll still make money if they're renting out the property.
I know it sounds kind of crazy, right? But what ends up happening is, I know, right? People stay in the homes. They end up renting them back. They get a way to liquidate. And a lot of times they have no equity in these homes anyway anymore, because either or they've lost money on them. And so this is a way for the people who live there who want to move to get out where they couldn't sell before. And the investor, of course, will make a lot of money over time, because they're going to buy these at a depressed price level, and then they're going to rent them out, and rents are going up. So they expect to make money over the long run.
That is Elise Glink, again, the author of 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. Find more at thinklink.com, bestmoneymoves.com as well. Great to talk to you again, Elise. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve. See you soon.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
A little bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Dennis Rodkin. You know, he writes about cranes for Chicago Business and has an interesting story about Homewood and how Homewood is trying to get the people who live in, say, Ukrainian Village and elsewhere to actually check out their suburb. And it holds up pretty well. So we'll talk to Dennis about that during the commercial break. Bill Geiger, who's here, was giving me my own personalized retirement consolation. So I appreciate that.
Did I say consolation?
Maybe it was consolation.
Consultation.
Our regular conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Okay, so I'm 55.
Right.
So I'm just entering your window, right?
That's
55
right.
to 60. And what does it mean? What's the significance of getting to that age?
Well, our firm specializes in working with clients in their late 50s to early 60s who are transitioning into a pre-retirement portfolio. And what's different about that stage of life is, for most people, you've got more money than you've ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing that you want is a big loss at that stage. So the two big jobs you have when you get to that age, Steve, is number one, don't have a big loss. And number two, start putting together a strategy to create the income you're going to need in retirement so you can pay your bills for the rest of your life.
We talk a lot about saving, doing what you can, investing, but not...
That's building the pile up.
Right, but not about making that pivot then to building the moat around that pile in a way.
And if you've saved and if you build it, God bless, now protect it and start converting some of it into income. We sat down with a 60-year-old couple the other day. The guy took his rollover IRA, which was $800,000. He told me, he says, Bill, I don't need this until I have to start doing my RMDs at 70, 71, mm-hmm. 71 years old. We're creating out of $800,000, $125,000 a year for him for the rest of his life. You throw your Social Securities in that, you've got 150, 160 grand
Great.
As a paycheck
right.
for the rest of your life.
And, you know, we were just talking off the air about, not to get too much into the details, but I had a job earlier that I had a pension for.
Right.
Not a big pension. And I kind of, not that I forgot about it, but it was always out there. And I checked on it this week.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm trying to become ready for retirement.
Okay, good.
And so the payout, you know, it's not going to change my life, but it's there. And you had some interesting advice.
Yeah. Look into seeing if you can take a lump sum of that pension. Because if you can get a nice piece of cash for that up front, you can create your own private pension, maybe get more money per month for the rest of your life, and you own the asset. A regular pension, when you're gone, there's nothing left.
Right.
If you create your own private pension and some of the income strategies we talk about, you've got something that you can leave on to your kids.
So the idea is, how common is it that they would give a lump sum?
Oh, quite common.
Really?
A lot of times pension funds don't want the obligation of paying you every month for the next 30 years.
Right.
And frankly, I wouldn't want to be paid by a lot of pensions for the next 30 years. They may not be around. If you have a Chicago or Illinois pension and you have the choice to take a lump sum, I would run, not walk, and do so.
Yeah, and we're getting a little far afield, but the idea is if it's a lump sum, it's probably less than you would get forecast to be paid out over your lifetime.
No, it's less than a dollar amount, but you can create a bigger payout.
And then grow it that way.
Yeah.
All right. So there's that. And so let's get back to 55 to 60.
Right.
Tell me about the strategy then of whether it's getting that lump sum and putting it in somewhere. What you do to sort of...
Well, what you do, most
I was going to say pull back the reins, but that's the wrong image, isn't it? Because you're not pulling back the reins.
You still want growth. But most people at their late 50s, early 60s have way too much risk in their portfolio. And Steve, we do this all the time. You take part of that growth portfolio and you convert that to an income strategy. You reduce your risk and you create dependable, sustainable income that you can use for the rest of your life.
All right. And so we'll look for that. And hold on a second. I'm going to check my 401k.
Right.
Things are a little rocky on Wall Street.
Rocky
might not be the right word, but volatile.
A lot of volatility, yeah. It makes it a little difficult for folks to sleep at night.
Right. And people shouldn't be checking their 401k.
Well, when you get into retirement, you want to have created a portfolio that's as bulletproof as humanly possible. You don't want to spend your retirement wondering what happened in the market today and how it's going to affect your life.
We were talking, too, about the emotional aspect of all of this.
Sure.
And, you know, whether you're ready with money to retire, whether you're ready emotionally to retire. And you had a good point. Really, what the most valuable thing is just to know that you're there.
Yeah.
Work becomes easier when you know you don't have to do it.
If you know you can walk away today, imagine how you will experience work from that time
forward. It's a lot more fun.
Yeah. Steve, I know you're going to talk about this in a moment. We're going to do something special for our listeners. The next five callers who have at least $500,000, we'll sit down with them personally on a complimentary basis and put together a full-blown plan for the retirement.
All right, Bill Geiger, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, sir.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are at 12:38 on this Thursday afternoon. Welcome to the Business Lunch. Dennis Rodkin is in the studio, writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. And so let's start with a number. And the number, everyone, is $3,399. That, my friends, is the national average property tax bill. And that, my friends, is what none of you is paying.
Exactly.
So there are numbers out about just how out of whack we are in this area when it comes to property tax bills.
Yeah. So our property, this was a county by county report, or the way I got the data sliced up was. And so the interesting thing is what we reported is that in any Chicago county, the average property tax bill is higher than in 93% of U.S. counties. But in Lake County,
thank you very much,
the average is higher than more than 99% of all U.S. counties.
The average Lake County property tax bill, $8,990.
Yeah. And, you know, there are people paying $25,000 and $30,000 in tax
bills. I was talking about that. You know, I live in a building down by the creek. my house was built in the 30s, so it's an older house. But it's surrounded now by homes that the owners tore down those homes in the 30s. They're paying twice as much as what I'm paying. I mean, it's just incredible. So the idea is that if you see that, then you're like, well, okay, then that high tax must be offset by a lower tax elsewhere. But when it comes to the income tax, we're still pretty far up there.
Yeah, our total tax payments are among the highest in the country. And you know what's interesting is, so you're getting great schools and police service and that sort of thing. But look at the opposite end of that. Look at what's happening in Harvey, where because of the unpaid pensions, they're having to lay off police and fire and that sort of thing. And the question is, how over what period of time does that spread to more and more Chicago suburbs? Long time before it gets from South Cook County to affluent Lake County, but who knows where this is headed?
Tell me then, is that why, because of the property tax bills, I'm assuming not, but I'm going to use it as a segue anyway, why more and more wealthy people are renting?
I think that's one of the reasons, but
they're still paying the tax, right?
Yeah, in their rent. That was a fascinating figure that I found in this report. The number of households making about $130,000 or more who rent in Cook County nearly doubled in the past 10 years.
It's still one of the smaller brackets when
right.
you look at
yeah.
total
only
rentals.
About 60,000 households.
But it's a growing
renting.
One.
Yeah, and every other income bracket is growing at a much smaller rate. The other one growing at a large rate is the one just beneath it, people making between 75 and 130,000. So the two uppermost income brackets are the ones where the biggest growth is in renting.
And so why is that?
Well, a lot of reasons. First of all, some of it is you're pulled in by the supply, right? The builders, we've talked about all these towers built here and elsewhere, although this is Cook County, not just the city. So it's also rentals, luxury rentals outside the city, but within Cook County. That's one of the reasons. Another is it used to be, you know, I live on the North Shore, my kids grow up, I might move into the city. Now I'm a little more likely than I was in the past to move into the city and rent. Mm. It might be that it's because I can't sell my house on the North Shore, so I don't have the nut to put down on a new home. It might also be that I want to sort of feel my way around. There used to only be a few places that empty nester would come
to. That's a good point, right? And now there's so many different places
yeah.
to live.
Do I want to put? Do I want to be in Lincoln Park? Do I want to be in Bucktown? Do I want to be in the South Loop? So I may rent for a year or two in each of those before I figure out where I actually want to buy.
And so while those empty nesters come in, there are suburbs trying to lure the younger people out. We've talked about Lake Forest.
Yeah.
I don't know. I grew up in Manteno, so I'm not unfamiliar with Homewood, but I had no idea there's something going on there.
They, you know, it's a pretty interesting campaign. There are other suburbs that have done this. Lake Forest, as we mentioned, Berwyn is trying to attract city home, has been for years, city home buyers out to the suburbs. Homewood tried a pretty cool new approach. They're sort of trying to play on this idea that there's a creative community sort of building up down there. Housing is inexpensive. Anything you might be frustrated about if you're a young couple living in the city, difficulty getting into the right Chicago public school, traffic, high home values, they're saying you're going to find the solution in Homewood. And one of the things I love about it is they then did it in a format that works for these young home buyers. They did it as a graphic novel.
So people are sitting on the train and watching these graphic novel panels above them?
Sitting on the blue line, which runs through a lot of those neighborhoods they're talking about. They refer to Yuki Village and Logan and things like that in the graphic. And so you're sitting on the train in Logan or right. one of those thinking, how can I possibly afford the next step house that I need for my family, my growing family. We've got more kids. And this suggests, well, what if you checked out Homewood?
And you wrote about Homewood, right? One of the better places to buy a home. So there's some fire where they put their smoke.
I think Homewood is great. It's pretty far from the city. So it really isn't directly comparable to Ukrainian Village and things like that, but it has an urban style, old fashioned downtown with restaurants and stores right next to the train station. It's walkable. It's got older houses. The parks and forest preserves down there are wonderful. Yeah, I think Homewood's a great place to buy a house. Whether you're going to shift from Ukrainian Village to Homewood is a question.
It's interesting to me, two very different suburbs, Lake Forest or Homewood,
yeah.
and two very different sort of campaigns to lure people in.
In both cases, trying to say, hey, you know, we may not be exactly what you think we are. We may be a little bit different than you think we are. Please look here.
All right, that's Dennis Rodkin. He writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. We're going to come back in a few minutes and talk about a couple of wild individual real estate stories, and I love them for not just the main subject of the story, but what comes next. That's coming up on the Business Lunch, but right now it's time for the WinTrust Business Minute.
This is the WinTrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the WinTrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. Baseball season has finally begun, with the Sox and Cubs slugging away on the North and South sides, and business is good. But there's one looming deal still waiting to be finalized by the Sox at the new Guaranteed Rate Field. The last few steps need to be taken for the $100 million deal to be set in stone, as the park has pretty much finished its rebranding efforts. With a deal of this size, it's not out of the ordinary for there to be some delays. But patience is key when it comes to the big payoff. Ballot Ready saw their big payoff this week after securing a $1.5 million round of funding and took on a new chief technology officer. CEO Alex Demchevsky has received plenty of business recognition in recent years for bringing change to an industry that's in desperate need of innovation. The technology officer, Mike Saunders, brings great experience to the table after founding and selling Dot Menu to Grubhub in 2011. You heard it here. Keep an eye out for these guys. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:51 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Dennis Rodkin sitting in, closing out the show. Dennis, you usually start on Thursdays when you're here. It's very different, isn't it?
It feels completely different.
Right, I'm sure it does. Okay, you've got a couple of stories here. First of all, let's talk about the guy who was the co-creator of Siri.
Yeah.
Lived in North Barrington selling his house, right?
Yeah. Dag Kittlaus, who he lived in California when he and two others invented Siri, sold it for over $200 million to Apple, stayed with Apple for a while, then moved back here. And built a house in North Barrington in a place called Windstone, which is a gated golf community. And I learned this week, he actually was very generous about his time talking with me. He put down a contract on something on the 81st floor of Aqua, he and his wife did.
And Aqua's right here, right across the river.
Yeah, so he's moving down here from
North
Barrington.
He'll be my new neighbor when we move over there.
Exactly, when you get the other half of the 81st floor. Well, he's paying nearly $4 million, so we'll see, or $3.5 million, we'll see what you pay.
So he co-created Siri, and now he's working on Viv.
Viv, which is a Samsung version. It's apparently even more evolved than Siri. And sold that one as well. The same three partners did it, and they sold that for another about $200 million.
And here's why I like the story. It has nothing to do with any of that.
Yeah, right.
I love that he talked to you and talked about what a weather geek he is.
Yeah, it was that. You know how that is. I mean, when an interview goes in that direction, you realize, oh, this just wrote my story.
Exactly.
Because he said, well, you know, the reason I want to be up that high is I'm sort of a weather geek. He's going to be on the 81st floor. I'm sort of a weather geek, and I've got this weather monitoring room on top of my built on top of my house in North Barrington. And he just sort of went on with this. He's got a 90-foot balcony.
In North Barrington, he's got a weather room at the top of his house.
There's a room. Yeah, it's a two-story house with a third story, essentially a little tower. It's no bigger than this studio. It's like the size of somebody's living room. And he's got all his weather monitoring stuff up there.
I love that.
Can see the lightning up close, that sort of thing. So on the 81st floor of Aqua, where he'll have a 90-foot balcony, what he told me is he's going to fit it out with weather monitoring equipment. He's like a, you know, an amateur skilling. And he says that what he's going to do is he wants to find out about creating an app that is specific to the weather in that building. So like the neighbors would be able to say, oh, you know, it's 83 degrees for Chicago, but it's 82 here at Aqua.
So
or whatever
this
it would be.
Guy who co-created Siri is working on Viv, is if he's your neighbor,
right?
He's going to create a weather app so that you know how many minutes away the thunderstorm is.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, like, what a great spot to be if you really are a weather geek, you know, to be up on the 81st floor looking out over Grant Park, Millennium Park, and out over the lake. You're going to see every storm.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's another part of the story I like, too. We just had Matt McEntee in from Green Golf Partners last week, I think, ahead of the Masters, about golf courses and how they're doing and how they're... And so this Windstone, where he lived, was built around a golf course, right?
Yeah.
That was struggling. So if you buy his house, you get a year's free meals
at
Windstone. So but tell me about how they're trying to resurrect that.
Some of the homeowners, I guess Windstone had been struggling for a while, as far as I could tell. And some of the homeowners got together, bought the club so that the homeowners actually own the club, which is the old-fashioned model. That's what places like Indian Hill and some of those on the North Shore were. We're all going to get together and build our golf course and our mansions. And so they are... From what I understand, they're trying to make it more family-friendly. The dining options are less formal, that sort of thing. And the real estate agent representing the house, who is also a resident of Windstone, is giving a membership for what they call the social dining club, which is the sort of family dining option.
I just like that here's this group trying to help survive this golf course in this area when a lot of golf courses are failing. Okay, from there to Hinsdale in the Bill Veck house.
Yeah, I love this story because it was, so I've been covering the Bill Veeck house for several years. It first went on the market, both Bill Veecks, the father who worked for the Cubs and the son who worked for the Cubs.
So the senior worked for the Cubs, bought it in what, like 1915?
Right about 1915, okay. Right about the time they bought the house. And then his son, who worked for the Cubs but also owned the White Sox and other teams over the years, not only grew up in the house, but lived there when he was first married, lived over the garage when he was first married. It had been for sale for several years. I was out there in about 2010 when it first hit the market. Great old house, but aged, needs to be updated.
Sure.
Stayed on the market for quite a while, went through a couple of contracts, finally was bought just 2016. And then came back on the market last week. And I said, well, what's going on? Well, it turns out that relatives, billionaire relatives of the Veecks, put a preservation easement on the house so that it can't be demolished. It's a beautiful house, but it's a more beautiful piece of property, so it would be likely to be torn down. So the Craybill family of the Molex company,
who sold Molex for billions,
right,
has now spent a little bit of money,
right,
to keep
so the Veeck house won't be a wreck.
Very nice. Could be
How
a book
that?
Right there.
I could have.
Dennis Rodkin. Read a lot more at chicagobusiness.com. Love when you come in. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Steve.